When you think of the things that make living in a community enjoyable or at least passable, there's a long list of amenities, and that list often includes arts and culture. Communities in many places are working to assess just how important arts and culture are to the people who live there. Our next guest is right in the middle of that effort. Eric Friedenwald Fishman is the creative director at the Metropolitan Group, headquartered in Portland. He's in Southern Oregon to talk with community leaders about arts and culture and the importance we attach to them. Eric, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Jeff, thanks for having me. And yes, this project we're working on actually is all about moving the concept of arts and culture from being described as an amenity to being an actual valued, appreciated, and experienced part of everyday life.
Amenity as opposed to something a little more structural and necessary like streets and schools and things like that?
If you've been involved in the arts at all in the last 30 years, you've been to a public meeting where it's, hey, we love the arts, they're great, but we need to pay for the important stuff like streets and schools first. And really, in America, we've moved over about a 30-year period to seeing the arts and culture as a nicety rather than a necessity. And this effort, which is a national effort, of which Oregon is one of four pilot communities, is really looking at delving deeply into understanding what are the underlying values Americans have and what is the value that experiences with things that we might describe as arts and culture deliver for folks that make it a part of valued daily life.
So was there a time when the equation was flipped and we did view arts and culture as a necessity and not a nicety?
If you were to rewind 30 plus years ago, you would find that having a music program in your public schools, having an art program in your public schools, having a theater program in your public schools was not considered special, was not something people went out and had to fundraise for, was not something that was added on when budgets were good and cut when budgets were bad. It was just considered a part of what you had. If you were to go back even further, at the time where many of folks, my family included, came to the United States as immigrants, it was not unusual that folks would hear opera in the park. Everyone had Caruso albums in their apartments, etc. It's really been in recent years, last three decades, that there's been a significant divestment. If you look at that, not only has it been a shift in the narrative around arts and culture, but there's been a big shift in terms of funding for arts and culture. While the actual dollars being spent on arts and culture today are slightly higher than they were 30 years ago, if you actually factor them for inflation, it's 30% less than we were spending 30 years ago.
It seems to coincide pretty neatly with about the time that wages began to stagnate in America. Is that one of the major issues, is that we're not as wealthy as we once were, at least not from the middle class on down?
You know, the research that we've been doing on this project really is not looking at economics and causes. It's looking at what we do in terms of solutions. So I could posit opinions about that same time period is also when a political set of theories started being put forward on economics and divestment in the public sector, et cetera. That's not really what we've been studying. What we've been studying is looking at this vast array of research that's been done about Americans' relationship with arts and culture and seeing that virtually all of it has been done through a lens. It's an arts and culture lens. We ask people, what do you think about arts and culture? How valuable is arts and culture to you? As opposed to, what are the things that you value in your daily life? What are the things that are really important to you in your community? And when people start talking about the things that might be determined by the NEA, National Endowment for the Arts, as being arts and culture, instead of labeling them as such, saying, well, tell us about why. Tell us about these activities and what's important to you about them. What do they do for you? What do they benefit in your life? And really, that's what this research has been about on a national basis, is really looking at what's all the work that's been done about understanding Americans' attitudes towards arts and culture. And from that, seeing some gaps in terms of what are the underlying values that people have, what is the labeling or the language that is most relevant, and what is the way to deliver messages about those experiences that resonate with people and that increase the perspective of this being a valued and expected part of what we have in our community.
So is the ultimate goal of the project assessment or promotion?
So the ultimate goal of the project, this is a very long-term project, which is really around shifting public will, shifting what is our normative community expectation. So if you look at the theory of public will building, a great example of that is 15 years ago, had I gone on a trip like I did last week across the country, when I checked into my hotel, if I'd asked for a non-smoking room, they might, if they were being really nice, have removed the ashtray from the room right before I checked in. And if I'd traveled just 2 years prior to that, my airplane would have been full of cigarette smoke.
Right.
And almost every meeting I went to would have been in a conference room in a waiting room full of cigarette smoke. It's quite possible your waiting room would have had ashtrays in it. And we can't imagine any of that now. And at that point in time, we had had 70 years of health and anti-tobacco crusaders losing virtually every battle. And the distinction there was that the tobacco industry had identified a very closely held value that Americans have called individual freedom. We care a lot about our individual freedom. And for years and decades, you could not change smoking policy because you were interfering with my individual freedom to smoke. And it was when the research came out about secondhand smoke and the fact that I might not be smoking, but if you were, your smoking could impact my health, that that possibly changed. The problem was people started talking about that science and still nothing changed. And it was only when the health advocate said, wait a minute, this scientific evidence gives us a link to that same value. We can say you're interfering with my individual freedom not to smoke. You're interfering with my individual freedom not to get cancer, that we started seeing massive change. You know, now in Oregon, you can't even smoke in a bar. So what the long-term goal of this project is not marketing, is not promotion. It's actually normative shift and change in what we expect as a society, and to have that expectation be that arts and culture are a valued part of everyday life. And if we make that shift, then from that rising tide, many individual efforts, whether that's advocating for a local arts budget, whether that's diversifying who buys tickets to a show, there's many promotional and advocacy efforts that could benefit. But the core focus of this project on a national basis is really to say, are there better ways that we can communicate and can design and program arts and cultural experiences? And are there different ways of thinking about how we engage the community and who we engage in the community so that arts and culture are a better part of everyday life? And we've found, had some very interesting findings from this national year-long research project.
We're talking about building public will for arts and culture with Eric Friedenwald Fishman, who's the creative director at the Metropolitan Group based in Portland. So how did the project, you didn't mention it's a national project, Oregon, one of several pilot states. How did it get started? How did Oregon get included?
Great. So the project got started a few years ago. A group of arts leaders from around the country gathered for a couple of days, basically folks who were heads of arts commissions for states and for regions, folks who were heads of major arts funders, who knew each other from being at various national conferences and hearing the same complaints year in, year out about, we're always the first budget cut, we're always the last budget restored, you know, the nicety versus necessity. And a few of us said, hey, why don't we all get together, leave our hats out of the room about what organizations we're from and talk about what would solve this problem. And we started looking at what's been done in the environmental community and what's been done in the public health community. And we realized that in arts and culture for decades, it's been this battle to save the NEA's budget, this battle to save the Oregon Arts Commission budget, this battle to save the Illinois Arts Council's budget. We fight one battle at a time, and we are careening from one narrative to another based upon what's being set as the meta-narrative externally. So if you've been paying a lot of attention to arts and culture, you can rewind. And about 12 years ago, it was all about economic multiplier effect. You know, the arts are an economic driver. And then it was all about if you have arts in schools, it's good for math and science. And we've been careening from one message to another really around what's hot in the marketplace or reacting to how people have been framing arts from the outside. So that group of leaders identified the need to do a research project to figure out what were the underlying values that could shift public will and what was known in terms of the messaging. And from that, we were able to raise some funding nationally, thank you to the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, and raise money around the country from folks who care about arts and culture to do a comprehensive literature scan looking at what research already existed, from that to identify and frame a set of questions that there weren't good answers to, really focusing on, one, what are the underlying values that could connect with arts and culture? Two, what is the messaging that is most effective around that engagement? And three, what is the right definition or labeling? Should you call it arts? Should you call it culture? Should you call it arts and culture? And we've got some interesting information I'd love to share with you about what we learned.
Well, I was going to ask you, if you don't want to call it arts and culture, because those can sound rather abstract, you look for ways to express it a little more individually about things that appeal to people.
Well, what we learned, and I want to be really clear that we're not saying those are bad words, but what we learned is that for most people, the lens of arts and culture, if you say, how much do you value arts and culture, how important is that to you? For most people, that's a lens that's a little bit distant. Mm-hmm. It says they define arts and culture as being something that's the creativity of somebody else. It's something that is judged. It's something that is critically ranked. It is something that they can be judged about when they participate. And for many people, that is a gateway that they do not feel as comfortable going through. There are many people who do, but there are many people who do not. What we learned is that the concept of creative expression, that people see the idea of creative expression as both meaning their own creativity and the ability to solve problems and the ability to play fantastic music or the ability to write poetry or the joy they have in doing pottery.
But it goes beyond arts and culture.
Right. And they also see it as going to watch the opera or going to see the Oregon Shakespeare Festival or going to an incredible performance at Brit. Most Americans see within the lens of creative expression both what we would consider formalized arts and culture and what they do in their daily lives, and at a very significant number, they see that as something that's really important to them. And so one of the things that we've learned is not to expunge the use of the words arts and culture, but if you come at it and talk about it as creative expression, it's much more inviting, and people see it as being meaningful and relevant both to them experiencing their own creative expression and to experiencing the creative expression of others.
So just a couple seconds left. Is there a time at which this turns into some sort of a campaign or strategy, or has it already done so?
So the research phase has been completed, and over the course of the next 2 years, we will be doing an implementation pilot in Oregon, California, Michigan, Minnesota, and there's actually a conversation of several other states coming on board, as well as a national project with support organizations like the National Theaters, etc., to start applying this research to the programming that people do.
Okay. Building Public Will for Arts and Culture. Eric Friedenwald Fishman, thanks so much.
Thank you.